Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome, fight fans, to BTR Boxing Podcast. I'm your host, Sean, and today I'm joined by Christian Schembe, all the way from Malta, who's going to be talking to us about his journey through the sport of boxing. And I'm excited to talk to you today, Christian, in this episode, because, you know, it's different when we have all these different guests on from all these different places of the world, and it's nice to understand different people's journeys and how they've transitioned into the sport, how they've found the transition from an amateur to professional careers, and how the professional careers have gone, and the ups and the downs, highs and the lows, and everything that comes in between all that. So thank you for coming on, and I'm really excited to hear your journey.
Yeah, I'm really pleased to be on here as well, and you can ask away, and I'll tell you everything from boxing in Malta, how it is, and all about my career. I'm really happy to be on.
Well, it's got to start at the beginning for me, and I want to know, like, how you got into boxing. Where did all this career begin? Going right back to the beginning and sort of your fascination with this sport.
So basically, my family from my father's side, even my granddad from my mom's side, they were all quite a bit like fighters, you know, but not boxers. They were into martial arts, and back then, like in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't any boxing in Malta, or very little. So everybody was in martial arts, and they used to do a lot of street fighting, too much. They used to get too much into a lot of trouble. But anyway, so even my cousins, the older ones. So then when I was growing up, we used to watch a lot of Chuck Norris movies, Bruce Lee movies, and stuff like that. And I used to do karate because I was bullied at school from a very young age. So my dad took me to karate. So it was always in me. But then when I reached my teenage years, like 10, 11, I started falling in love with football, and I wanted to try my hand at that. And even because everybody at my secondary school was playing football, and I didn't know how to. And then it reversed. It didn't matter that I knew how to fight, because I didn't know how to play football. Everybody was like kind of ostracizing me, you know, putting me on the side. So then I played football for quite some time, but we still kept playing around, me and my dad at home. And then when I was 17, started drifting towards the game, kickboxing mainly. And by the time I was 20, I got fed up with football, and I took it on full, like, training, not full time. I was working still, but I just focused on that, you know. I focused on kickboxing and boxing at the same time. I was having fights in both kickboxing and boxing during the year. Then in 2014, after a kickboxing fight fell out, and like one of the toughest guys in Maltese boxing ever, he offered to step in and fight boxing. He was a veteran. I think he had like his first boxing fight when I was born in 92 or something like that. And he took it on, I took it on. And I lost by like a point on two judges' cards, and I won on the other one. And it's funny, actually, I remember clear as day. The referee, I would have got a draw if I stopped at the third round, because the first day said it was a three round. The referee was going to stop it after the third round. He said, last round. Now that I'm no man, we said we're going to fight four. I want to fight four. I don't care what we're going to do. And anyways, we fought the fourth round, and two of the judges gave it to the other guy. So I lost on a split. But anyways, after that, I decided that I'm going to just stick with boxing, you know?
So it's fair to say then, isn't it? Like, you've tried quite a few different sports. And I used to compete kickboxing here in the UK. And I also used to do boxing as an amateur back when I was about 15, 16. So I've done a bit of both myself competitively. So I do know there's a different sort of transition. And I'm just interested for someone else who's also done the same thing, who's transitioned from one sport to another competitively. How did you find that transition, and was there any difficulties in you going from kickboxing to boxing?
Not really, because I was doing them both at the same time. I think it would be a lot more difficult for someone who never threw kicks in his life from boxing to transition to kickboxing. I mean, kickboxers have a notoriously too high guard, and they will be too stand up and lack of head movement. So when I started focusing on boxing only, I improved a lot. Like, just like in a few months, you could see the difference in my technique. And the main thing was head movement, because before, when I was kickboxing, I just used to block and punch back, block and punch back. Then I started keeping a lower stance and slipping and rolling more. Before, I was just pressure fighter going in all the time, just pong, drunk punches. I don't care if I get hit with 3, 4, 5, as long as I get mine. Now I have a different perspective. But so yeah, the transition wasn't that difficult. And I was, even when I was fighting kickboxing, I always had good hands compared to my peers. Like, even people who had started kickboxing before me, and I was fighting them, because I had better hands than them, and I had kicks from my karate days, I'm quite flexible as well. I was still on the same level or better. So then when I transitioned to boxing, I didn't find it that hard, you know?
Yeah, I totally relate to that. And I think one of the biggest differences between the two for me was the footwork and the movement, as opposed to in kickboxing. Yes. It's a little bit more static, and obviously you're kind of looking to place your kicks and your punches, whereas with boxing you've got to use a lot more movement. You've got to use your feet, you've got to try and do these sort of small steps to get on the inside, whereas when you're relying solely on your legs, which is predominantly what a lot of kickboxers use, it makes it more difficult to reach the target, especially when you're quite a short individual like me. I'm quite a short guy, so every time I was always up against somebody, I was always fighting somebody that was taller, so the only way for me to get on the inside was just to sort of slowly work my way in, and just sort of these small little steps as I'm moving in and moving my head side to side. And it was quite interesting, like, to hear from your perspective how the transition was just so smooth and so much different, and how it's more preferred. I mean, I personally more preferred the boxing than I did the kickboxing. I was always more better with my hands than I were with my feet, because they had such short legs. It was more difficult to get to the target, so you had to rely on your hands instead. So yeah, that's it. It's good to hear that transition that you made into the sport, and I think it leads nicely into where you went from there, really, because I don't think there's a lot of people here in the UK that are very educated on Maltese boxing and what boxing is like in Malta. So I suppose this is where you're going to come in and explain a little bit more to, like, me and the people that are listening to this interview, like, how Maltese boxing works and suppose how it worked for you when you started going into boxing.
Yeah, when I went into boxing, There was no pro fighters in Malta and no amateur boxing either. So it was basically unlicensed fights. We used to get a lot of our opponents from the UK, from the unlicensed boxing scene, like the white collar boxing scene in the UK. So the standard wasn't very high. I was lucky to, my first coach alongside my kickboxing coach, the boxing coach was Steve Martin. And he used to train a lot with Scott Dixon back in the day. You might know the name. He's in Malta now. I fought him 3 times actually. And he trained a lot. Then he got Colin McNeil to Malta. I think he was a good Irish amateur, if I'm not mistaken, or Scottish. And Barry Smith, right now he's helping with Ben Davison, you know? He's helping him with his fighters. And he used to come. So I was lucky in that way that I had a coach who trained from coaches with lineage and experience, not someone who saw someone do box fit and he said, okay, I'm going to start teaching box fit. Because boxing, there are these kind of coaches still in Malta, you know? And it was good as well that they had the connections. But then slowly Steve turned pro and we used to fight on the same shows. We used to have like semi-pro fights first and then the pro fights at the end. Then slowly, slowly the amateur boxing, because a lot of kids started to train more, because boxing before was seen kind of like a dodgy sport, you know, where either like ex-criminals or like people, I don't know, like troublemakers used to get into it, you know. But then when they started organizing the semi-pro boxing shows, the unlicensed ones, with as much effort put into them and as much quality as a pro boxing show abroad. And a lot of people starting to come with their kids to watch, because there used to be like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 a year. A lot of kids started training and you couldn't put them in. So then the amateurs start getting in again. I mean, COVID put an end to all of that and we're trying to restart again now. But anyways, then slowly, slowly fighters started to turning pro. The level was not that good. As you know, like when you're beating English fighters, you think like from my end, I thought I was having a pretty good level because I'm fighting like English guys and I'm beating them and whatever. And then,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When I turned pro, and that went well against Scott Dixon, first fight, although I lost on a split decision. Then when I went to London to train for the first time for a week, I got like 10 beatings in 5 days. So then you realize, listen, the level is not the same and there needs to be a change in Malta for us to reach that level. Now, fortunately, a lot of the guys from my generation have been abroad to train in different countries, fighting abroad and stuff like that. And now we are coaching the younger people in the way they need to be coached. I mean, competition is always going to be less to reach that level, because like in England, if you go in at an amateur boxing class, you will have a guy with 1 or 2 bouts training with a guy who's had no bouts and is joining for the first time, but they are both seeing someone who has like 50 or 60 fights if he's not with the GB. So from that, they will learn a lot faster. But hopefully one day we can reach that level again.
So it's obviously that's a great difficulty with Maltese boxing, is they are obviously, you know, with all due respect, levels behind a lot of the major countries that have boxing as a key sport in that country. So obviously there's a little bit of a way to go, but I know that you've found, as you've rightly pointed out, that there are different levels to the sport, and suddenly you find out that actually the people you have been fighting, with the greatest of respect to them, are nowhere near the sort of the standard level that you expect out of certain fighters. And this is why, like you rightly said again, it was why a lot of fighters from across Europe in particular always come over to England, because they want to get these opportunities, they want to take these opportunities. And now and again, some of these guys do come over and actually upset the apple cart and cause these upsets and actually start to make a name for themselves. You know, there's probably, out of every 10 fighters that do come over, you'd probably say that, you know, 5 or 6 of them maybe aren't at that level, but then there's a good four or five of them that probably I've got that potential to go on and do something within the sport. And I know throughout the course of your career, which we're going to go into, you know, you've experienced the different highs and the lows of these levels. And you mentioned Scott Dixon. Obviously, Scott will be remembered over here for fights with some notable names in the sport. He was a former Commonwealth champion. He fought the likes of Jamie Moore and Matthew Macklin. You know, these are household names to the average British fight fan over here. So, you know, for you to share the ring with someone with so much experience, not just once, not just twice, but 3 times, is obviously, it is giving you that quality experience that you need. Even though obviously Scott's an older guy now, he still possesses that quality and that skill, that benchmark of what you expect to find when you fight guys at a certain level. So I'm interested to know now, like, where your career, when your career started, and how it sort of has progressed on over the past 5-6 years since you turned pro in 2015.
So I think the first Scott Dixon fight was an eye opener in 2 ways. Now, I used to do wrong things, and I still do wrong things with my technique up until now. But back then, I used to do a lot more things. So when I shared the ring with him, even though I went 10 rounds, and a lot of people said I should have won the first fight, probably it's a blessing that I didn't. I noticed some things which I needed to start doing differently, like let go of my shots with them whip them a little bit more than I used to. Then it caught my attention that I need to start investing in myself more. So like the money from my full-time job, I save from it, and the purses that I get from boxing, I save them and travel with them, you know. I stayed like hostels and with a room. Like the first time I stayed in a room with 6 other people or 7, then I said, nah, no more. But I used to stay like in a room with 3 or 4 other guys or 2 in the beginning. And I used to go before every pro fight. I went again before my second fight with Scott Dixon, because I lost the first one. Then I fought, that was September. Then I fought in December or November it was. And I won that one against Jamie Lambert. Then I fought against a guy, I forgot his name, but he was shit. And I knocked him out in the second round. No, he shouldn't have been a drink. That's what I told him after the fight. And I told him, get back to training and don't fight for another year. And then I fought Scott Dixon again. So before I fought Scott Dixon again, I went for another week in London to train with Barry. And what I used to do was that I come back, I write notes of what I do during training, what he says, and the drills that he gives me, and when I see the other guys training, and then work on it over here in Malta myself. So basically, that's how it progressed. Then over the years, I mean, at first I thought I was going to keep winning and winning and winning, and after 4 or 5 years, I'll be fighting for a world title. But then again, you realize levels. I believe I have the potential to, at least if not world championship, to like fight for European and maybe win it. But slowly, slowly, baby steps. So I kept... The first time I traveled to Rome on a short notice fight, and I lost on points. I came back, I won some more, kept on traveling. And, you know, then I've won some and lost some. But over the years, I think I'm a million times better fighter than when I started out. And all thanks to these experiences of going abroad, investing in myself. I've been training in New York and England, in London, in Sweden, in Hungary. And I fought in Switzerland. I fought in Italy. I fought in Stoke as well against Nathan Heaney. So yeah, I took my losses, but I've won quite a bit as well. And I think there's plenty more left in me.
I think that's one thing people are going to look at when they listen to the interview with you, is they're going to look at you and go, right, okay, he's had 30 fights, he's won 21 of them, he's lost 9 of them. But I think it's key to sort of point out to people that are listening, that are getting to know you through here, is that you've rightly pointed out the levels in boxing are so different. And if you've not had the apprenticeship within boxing and gone up through them levels and progressed the way, say, a standard fighter in, say, the UK or the US does, then it makes it much more difficult. And it's also about being able to get opponents that are at a certain level. I mean, obviously, if you're fighting a lot in Malta and you're finding that the level of opposition is so much more different to what you're seeing when you go to these different countries, you start to realise, actually, you know, I need to travel a little bit more. I actually need to go to these different places and take these fights with these different opponents, because how are you going to progress? How are you ever going to progress if you don't do that? And this is exactly what you've done. So whilst your record might show 9 losses on it, actually, when you look at the depths of that record, you can see that you've travelled, you've been to different places, you've fought different people. You mentioned Nathan Heaney, and for people that are UK fight fans that are listening, they will know who Nathan is. You know, we spoke about it off the podcast, and we were talking about, like, in the UK, he's regarded as someone who's got this potential to go quite far within the sport. Now, you went 10 rounds with him only 2 years ago. You took him the distance, and people regard him as an opponent to sort of a force to be reckoned with within the division. So for you to take him 10 rounds just shows to me on the outside that you've progressed levels from where you started out at, because other opponents have fallen sooner and have struggled badly with Nathan, whereas you've been able to come in there and give him a few things to think about, a few problems, and shown that your level has gone from there up to there. So sort of, you know, lower to higher as the fights have gone on. And you've rightly pointed out so many times throughout the course of this interview that it's about learning, it's about continuing to learn. It doesn't matter if you have 9 losses, 10 losses, 11 losses on your record, but if you're learning throughout the course of that and you're stepping them levels up and you start to see the differences in the training and everything that you're doing, then that's where you start to see that actually you have got the potential to move forward within your career. And you're at a point now there where you're looking to do that. You're actually at a point where you feel, you know, you've gone through these different levels and now you're ready to start stepping this up to a point where you believe you've got the potential to go on and at least fight and potentially win a European title.
Yeah, that's what I believe. I've always believed it, but when I met different coaches and trained with different coaches, and they show me things, and I start doing them, and I impress myself that I can do these things, then of course I will have a lot more belief in myself. Like this year, a couple of months ago, I trained with Peter Fury. They were over here in Malta, and I was going to go there. Then I suffered an injury and I couldn't. That was going to keep me out for like the majority of this year. I had an eye injury. So, when you get positive feedback from guys like that, and guys who have experience, I told you over here as well. I trained with Barry Smith, trained with Henry Wharton as well. You know Henry Wharton?
Yeah, everybody in the UK knows Henry Wharton. He's a great fighter from the 1990s. Had some fantastic fights, in particular with Robin Reed. And we know him really well. And he's obviously training a few fighters here in the UK. So
yeah, he's got some really good talent in the gym. I spent 3 weeks there training with him before the Nathan Heaney fight. But what you mentioned and what is very, very, very important, and some people do not actually understand the importance is the apprenticeship, especially in the amateurs. When you look like at myself and other fighters who started at the same time, we quickly reached a ceiling before turning pro, because the unlicensed scene has a very low ceiling. When you have the amateurs, there's so many different levels, so many different skill levels, so many different styles you're going to encounter. So when you turn pro, you have already experienced like most of the things you're gonna find in boxing, except like the distances, the toughness, the lack of headgear back then. And we didn't have that. And I actually think as well that I turned pro way too early as well. Because if I hadn't turned pro and I kept on traveling and training in different countries whilst taking over in the semi-pro scene, I would have improved a lot more. Okay, I would have a better record. Okay, I wouldn't have improved from the fights that I took, but it's good to improve in the gym as well.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, it's safe to say you're not doing this the easy way. And I don't think there is any easy way in boxing, but you're certainly trying to pay your dues.
You learn with punches to the head, yeah?
Yeah, well, you're certainly paying your dues before you get to that level you want to be at. And it's great to hear your enthusiasm, ambition that you have for the sport and how you want to, take boxing, not just take it, but you want to take it and turn it on its head, and you want to be, you're Maltese, and you want to be showing that boxing in Malta is on the rise, it's on the up. You know, there's a way to go to get it to where it needs to be. Of course, that's understandable. It's going to take a number of years to get that sort of foundation to be really solid. But you know, you're someone who's coming out and going to different countries and fighting different people and proudly doing it as a Maltese person who wants to, you know, represent his country and show that, you know, we've got some decent fighters over here. We've got some guys that are actually coming through. So, Christian, I just wanted to jump a little bit into your personal life. We've touched a lot about boxing and spoke a lot about, you know, Maltese boxing in Malta, where things are, a little bit about your career, your rise through the ranks and where you're at the moment. But I'm interested to know a little bit more about you and you as an individual. Now, I know a few little bits of information that Mark Wilson Smith has kindly passed on to me to tell me a little bit about what you actually get up to outside of the ring. So I was quite interested to read through a few of these little tidbits, and he mentioned a couple of bits of information. One of them, he said, is you're actually quite you love animals. You're quite a big animal lover, and you were actually adopted a horse, and also you're actually speaking out a lot against animal cruelty, which is something that's quite close to a lot of people's hearts.
Yeah, no, I think, well, when I speak about animal, well, I'm vegan, so that's the first thing. I've been vegan now since 2017, and talking about animal cruelty and stuff like that, I don't want to touch on that anyways, but like on the whole veganism thing, but when I speak out against animal cruelty, I give people this example. How many people have betrayed you or acted in bad faith against you in your life? And they will tell me it's like, I don't know, 5, 6. And then I tell them, how many animals? It's like 0. Or maybe, there was a dog that bit me. Yeah, but what did you do? What did you take away from the dog, you know? It's his, but anyways, that's why I love animals so much, because they just show loyalty, mostly loyalty and love. And for me, for people to act cruelly against animals and violence against animals, especially with no reason at all, just for fun or whatever, just like, I don't know, kicking cats and dogs or whatever on the street. I think you have to be really heartless. And I know it might sound a bit rich coming from a boxer, but we have a choice. They don't, you know? It's not like he's coming over asking for a fight. I mean, yeah, but so yes, I am a bit of an animal lover in that way. We adopted a horse for me and my wife for a couple of years. Then now she got another horse because she's she's an equestrian rider. She's quite a good one as well. She jumps, and we have a French bulldog. He's at my feet at the moment, smelling my socks after a day at work. So yeah, my mom has got two dogs as well. We've always had dogs in the family. So yeah, I mean, animals, they just show love. So you have to show love back.
So also, you talk about being in the gym. I believe you're also coaching as well. You're not just training for your own individual needs, but you're also trying to help the youth, the future of Maltese boxing, essentially. And you're trying to teach some of these kids this discipline and trying to show them the foundations and the fundamentals of what this sport is all about.
Yeah, so basically coaching is my full-time job as well. Like, fighting is a side thing. and I hold group classes, I hold kids classes as well. I do one-to-one training during the day. And I've got all sorts of people training with me. I've got like kids who come twice a week, and they just do it for fun whilst I'm teaching them the basics. I hold off from sparring with kids until like they're like 11, 12 years old and they really want to do it. Because some kids might like it and some kids, it might really scare them and they just don't show up anymore. And it's better that they do 50% of something than 100% of nothing. And Maltese with the really big problems with obesity and inactivity in kids and adults as well. So you have to keep that in mind. And then at the moment, I've got quite a bit of, well, not quite a bit, but I'm training two guys and a girl at the moment. Like, one's Colombian, one's Spanish, and one's and the girl is Maltese, for a fight show on the 13th of May. So I try to give them as much of my time as possible, because I believe as well that whatever, if you don't teach and pass on what you've learned yourself, it will die with you. But if you try and teach it to, let's say, another three people, and out of those three people, two decided to pass it on to three other people themselves, I think you can do a whole lot of good, you know, especially if what you're teaching is a good thing. If you don't pass on your knowledge, it's what you've learned over the years, it's a waste and a shame.
In my opinion. I agree. I totally agree. And it's a great mindset to have. But what's the point of taking everything with you to the grave if you can't pass on that wisdom?
Especially with kids in a sport like boxing, which can instill a lot of discipline. Yeah. And if you teach them, it will just help them in life as well, you know? Because if they take the discipline that they learn in boxing through their daily life, they will be a lot better for it. I mean, boxing, like, I was rolling down the hill when I was 19 years old and boxing stopped me and grabbed me back up. So.
And it has that effect on a lot of people, and that's why it's so important. I mean, like in the UK, just as an example for us, like the crime, knife crime in particular, is horrendous at the moment. Every single day I keep seeing news reports of people being stabbed in different parts of the country here in England and the UK as a whole. And boxing's one of them things where a lot of people are trying to champion it being put back into the education and into the curriculum again in the UK in schools, to try and make it part of physical education, because it provides a discipline. It doesn't always necessarily have to be about punching each other in the face. It could be the training element of it, the discipline element of it, that actually brings people into line and gives them a focus and a motivation in life, and actually sends them you know, down the right path, as opposed for them looking at a different way of trying to channel their anger and frustration. And unfortunately, a lot of the times when people do that, it leads to sort of serious crimes happening. So it's good that you're doing what you are doing at the moment with the kids around to try and give them something different to look forward to, even if it is they never ever step into a ring to spar, to box, whatever, but they've got this motivation and focus, then that alone is something you should be, you know, commending yourself for.
And on a much smaller scale, if someone has enough confidence in him to throw a punch, he'll be less likely to glass or stab someone. So,
well,
I think that's quite their direct interest for like the UK at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, there's one thing I wanted to ask you as well. Is like we've talked about the boxing as a whole, but we've not really talked about the promotional side of thing and how things work. Have you had any experience of how the promotions work in Malta, and have you ever been involved within the promotion directly, or have you got any plans
to be involved? Because it's like the small hall shows, like where you have to sell tickets and stuff like that. Sponsors are not that much. So like for the show, so I mean, It's not that big. Like, there's not that much money in boxing in Malta. So you would have like anywhere between 600 to 1,200 or 500 on a good night in boxing. I've always been promoting myself as much as I can since I began, because I always understood that if you don't sell tickets, you're not going to get fights. But then recently as well, I've started helping out with some promotions, especially during the COVID times when the promoter, who's also my manager, Demis Tano, he kind of wanted to take a backseat because he was starting to see like all this red tape around everything. So I said, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I started contacting fighters, putting everything together. Then thankfully, he steps in the last two, three weeks back then. Like in 2020 and 2021, and then he takes care of all the logistics, like table setting. There's a lot of VIP tables with drinks and food on them, because that is a lot more profitable than a normal seated ticket. But yeah, that was quite stressful, having to organize and fight at the same time. I remember when I fought in October 2021. In October 2020, I fought against Angel Emilov, and I had a really good fight. One of my favorite fights, the way I used my technique and stuff like that. But I remember on my way out to the ring, I'm like, what ring walk did I use? What ring song did I, what walking song did I do? And I'm like, no, I'm never going to do it again. I promise.
So there's a lot more to it, isn't there?
Yeah, and some people think that promoting this show is just put two and two together and you get four, but it's a lot more than that, especially when you get late pullouts from the fights, you have to find replacements, book the flights, and whatever. Sometimes it gets crazy. Like last November, I fought at a show. It wasn't promoted by us. I fought another promoter's show, and they pulled out all the stops to make sure that I fought. Because, so you know, like there's the green list, amber list, red list, and dark red list for COVID countries. So the guy, first I was supposed to fight a Ukrainian guy who was taller than me and Orthodox. Then they found out that Ukraine was a red listed country. So he would have had to quarantine when coming into Malta for 2 weeks. Wouldn't have fought. Then they got in a Georgian guy. And Georgia was on the red, not dark red list. So as long as he provides proof of vaccination, he could enter the country. So they got him in. On the day of the weigh-in, he arrived in the morning, and some really intelligent person at the airport security staff decided that Georgian Pfizer jab isn't the same as a Maltese or European jab, Pfizer jab. So they made him wait for like 10 hours in a confinement in a room. until the promoter was talking to the airport. The airport sent him to the tourism ministry of the government. Then the tourism ministry sent him to somewhere else until he had to use his contacts to reach some very high ranking officials in Malta. And they told him, listen, just let the guy in. He fights and then he goes back home. So, yeah, it's not that simple promoting.
No, it certainly doesn't. It's not that simple, I think, anywhere. There's so many different variables to it that I don't think people genuinely see from the outset. They don't understand how many different issues can actually go on in the weeks, the days, and even the hours leading up to fight night, which we know is very difficult. A couple of great examples from yourself there. So I suppose, finally, Christian, moving into, you know, wrapping this interview up, I really want to come back and focus on you and just get a bit more of a summary of your aspirations now moving forward. Because we've talked a lot about your career, where it's been, where it started, where you've got up to so far, and the differences in the levels. But I'm curious to know, like, now, where do you go? What do you do? And ultimately, what do you want to get out of this at the end of it all?
Well, I'm not a prize fighter. I'm a pride fighter. I fight for my pride and honor. So I want to keep fighting as long as I can do it at the best of my abilities. And I want to be back in the ring by late October, early November. And then then kick on next year and got some good contacts now in England. I'm training along with Steve Martin. I'm training with another guy called Paul Quarmby. He had a very good gym in Hatton Lahoul. He's in Malta now. And after I started training with him, I got this injury. But we're still in contact. And he's going to hop down to the gym this week. So we're going to train together again. And we've got some good contacts that hopefully you're going to see me in some British rings very soon. And upsetting the apple cart.
That's the
and
one.
From there, maybe I get some title shots that I want to. My dream is to win the European title, the blue one, the blue belt. That's the thing. I mean, I would settle for other regional title belts, you know, beggars ain't choosers. we don't have any Eddie Hearn in Malta or Frank Warren. But I believe I can do it. I believe I just need a chance, you know, even just get a late notice, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I make the weight, jump in. And I want to get one of those titles, one of them, a European title, a regional title. The ultimate dream would be a world title, of course, but slowly, slowly, step by step.
Absolutely. So where can people find you then on social media to follow your journey, follow what you're doing in the gym, what you're doing in general? Where can they follow you to do that?
Well, I'm on Facebook. Christian Chokos Shkemri, which is spelled C, my nickname, Chokos is my family nickname. It's spelled C-O-Q-Q-O-S. And they can find me on Instagram as well, which is C-O-Q-Q-O-S, Chokos _ Christian. And I regularly post updates about my career, like stories from my classes, like video clips from my training and stuff like that. Try to keep as active on social media as possible. So they will enjoy it.
Fabulous. Well, you know what? It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been a pleasure to hear more about the way things are for you, the way things work in Malta, what you do aside from boxing, of course, as well, and what your future ambitions are for this sport. And like you said, we hope to see you back in the UK. You know, hopefully there's a lot of UK middleweights out there looking for opponents.
I want to fight in London now.
That's it. You want to get these big opportunities to show that you actually have come on so far from where you started out at. And it's been a pleasure having you on. So thanks so much for taking the time out to speak to me, and I hope everything goes the way it does, and I'm sure we'll catch up again in the future to sort of see where things are.
Pleasure was all mine, and I look forward to it.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.